Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Henkel. Excellence is our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 285 for May 1st, 2015. FCA's Santa Claus shares some of his Easter eggs. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific or 19 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. Well, Gary, we find ourselves here yet again.
We do, John, and I thought it was interesting to see that on Autoline Daily today you had the HRV, and remember we were on that program several months ago, and you couldn't talk about it until today.
Nah, right.
And earlier this week, I was on the Honda Pilot program, and I can't speak about that for several weeks. So,
yeah.
Funny how these things happen.
I think they had problems at the plant. I've never had an automaker ask us to sit on information for 2 months.
So
we can get into that later in the show. We got to let everybody know we got Drew Winter from Ward's Auto World with us. Drew,
great to be here.
And we got to let him know our special guest too is Klaus Busse, head of all interior design at FCA USA, formerly known as the Chrysler Group. But Klaus, great having you back.
Thanks for having me. Thanks. Always fun being here.
Yeah, and, you know, Ward's does this great interiors design show, too, so we especially wanted Drew here on the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here with that.
How do we get all the great information out of Klaus?
Right.
So, Klaus, how long have you been doing this? I mean, we've known each other for years now, it seems. Yes. And
this is actually, I know you have your 300th show coming up, my 10th year. So on July 1st, it'll be exactly 10 years at Chrysler, Daimler Chrysler, now FCA.
Wow.
It's been a long, good, rewarding journey, but it felt like it was just a couple of years. Crazy how time flies. Mm-hmm.
Hey, I just noticed right now, you got a Hellcat T-shirt.
Well, yeah, it's my favorite T-shirt here.
That is the coolest. But you can't buy those, right? It was only the Hellcat team
those. Yeah, the launch team shirt, yeah. It's a cool shirt. It's actually one of these really nice, you know, sometimes you get these shirts and they go into the cupboard. This is a cool shirt.
And I just love the graphic of the Hellcat on it. I would buy that shirt. I'm not big into T-shirts. No.
You want to do an after-show shirt?
Yeah. Keep your shirt on, Klaus. Okay. Yeah.
All right, so everybody talks about the Hellcat in terms of the engine. Did you guys do something special on the interior?
Well, the interior is not different to the SRT standard interior. You get a Hellcat logo, but that's about it. No, the interior is standard throughout. The Hellcat is really classified by the performance, by the engine, and then some body parts that provide that extra cooling.
Except there is something special on the interior, and that's on the infotainment screen. Mm-hmm. You can call up all different kinds of performance parameters.
That is correct.
And that.
But that is already available for the SRT package. So once you go into the SRT world...
In fact, we got it up on the screen.
There you go.
There.
And this is actually pretty cool because you see us really putting Uconnect to use. Mm-hmm. We just yesterday picked up another award from a different outlet calling Uconnect Infotainment System of the Year because it's ease of use. And we're now building on that and we're creating these special pages for SRT.
So the graphics are awesome. They're clean, they're big, they're easy to read, there's a lot of depth to them. Is that part of interior design?
Absolutely. So everything you see here, all the graphics are done in my camp in the user experience group. We work with Uconnect Group. Uconnect mostly provides the services, the technicalities behind it, the silver box, etc. But the graphics, and then we work with HMI for the flow. But the graphics, everything you saw on those screens are all done in the interior organization.
Kudos to you guys, because in my book, those are the best in the business. Certainly amongst the best in the business.
Well, Uconnect works fantastic. Yeah. But you know, when I did an interview recently on the Interiors Conference and our 10 best interiors for this year, and I thought back and I said I think Chrysler's gone from worst to best really in about 6 years, and I just wanted to see if, I mean, you've talked a lot about your tough times and your transformation. Is that about the time frame you see it, or certainly when probably considering design, it goes back farther than that? But I mean,
no, I think the 6 years is the right time frame for what you see as a customer, which would take us back to 2009 when we launched the
Durango,
Dodge Ram.
Yeah.
Durango came in 2010, but in 2009, late 2008, that's when the Dodge Ram came out. That was the first interior that really stood for what we try to do. But obviously, as you know, it takes 2+ years to develop. So the work started in, 2005, 2006 with the launch of the Ram in 2008, and then since then, the products that you've seen.
Speaking of Ram, and I know we got some pictures here, you guys have this Texas Ranger edition.
Right.
This stuff is crazy, Ben. Let's bring up any of the pictures there from the interior of this car, because it's
so that was a special edition we did to support
the like this.
There you go, the Texas Rangers. Now, this is a one-off vehicle that we've donated to the Texas Rangers to support what they do down there and help them raise money, because it's they're not really well-funded, something that will probably be a surprise to a lot of people.
Hold that one, Ben. Stay on that one a minute. What's this like? It looks like the sheriff's badge on the center of the
council. That's exactly what it is. It's the Texas Rangers badge. This is like a solid aluminum piece that we milled out and put on there.
But it looks somewhat tarnished, or it looks like it's been out on the range.
The color and trim team did a fantastic job to actually weather the material, so it actually looks like it's been there around. But I don't know if you have an image also of the door. We have a real. There you go. Now this is special. This is a Mexican coin, and there's a lot of history with these coins.
Are these real coins?
This is a real coin that we bought off eBay.
Awesome.
We bought those off eBay. Four of them. I'm not going to tell you how much they were.
Okay. This is a one-off.
This is a one-off vehicle.
Oh, okay.
Genuine coins in there. But the relevance of that coin is when the Rangers came together as a group. And we're talking about 1960s when they came to this point where they felt like we got to find a way to identify ourselves out there, because there was no real dress code for them. There was no real uniform. They could wear what they want as long as they had their gun. So one of the wives of a Texas Ranger, she had like 40 of those coins at their home for whatever reason. And they said, there's the material that we need. So they took the coins and they used it as the material, and they just stamped the badges out of it. So if you look at a Texas Rangers badge from that time, you'll see the leftovers of the structure of the coins in there. That's the relevant of the coin.
Wow.
And we found those coins, real coins, the genuine coins, and we put them, because of that, into the vehicle.
Cinco pesos.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what it is. And I know it's, of course, Cinco de Mayo, but no. we did found the genuine coin. It has a historical relevance. We put it in the vehicle. And, again, it's a one-off vehicle that our friends down there really appreciate us helping them
out.
And
then, Ben, let's bring up those seats, too, because there's some detail in the seats I want to get you to talk about that are just extraordinary. Look at that.
Yeah. So that was quite a nice breakthrough with the laser etching. And that is
I was going to ask.
Yes.
It's not sewn.
No.
It's,
no, no. So this pattern that you see there is laser etching. So you just carefully take off the top layer of the leather and reveal the secondary layer underneath it.
And it's the kind of pattern that you might see in expensive cowboy boots.
Exactly, exactly. Now, here the good news is this is not just for the Texas Rangers. That is something that you can get in the Ram
Longhorn edition.
The top.
So
edition.
You can get that today.
This you can get.
Wow.
The Texas Ranger badge is again special. But this cool pattern on the seat that is available to the customer.
Yeah, and this is what we really noticed. I mean, what's changed so much in interior design, and particularly in trucks, and you look at just how the wood trim is done, and all the stitching, and the attention to detail that you never used to see this kind of stuff in a truck, and in fact, you never even saw it in a lot of cars or trucks that normal people could afford, and now you see all this really the attention to detail. And the nice colors and just the way everything lines up. I mean, it's just, you look at this and now you see with Chrysler's, their focus on what they call the Easter eggs, where you have the little treats for people that you find,
Right.
It's really fun to look at. And I think it's something that Chrysler has really created. In the industry is making these little design details
I'm glad you raised that, Drew, because when you look at a Ram, whether it's a Longhorn or here the special one-off Texas Ranger, You can spend a lot of money on that. So let's talk about the Jeep Renegade. And I know we got some pictures of that because that's at the opposite end of the spectrum. And so, Ben, throw some pictures up there.
Yeah, the Renegade is a special vehicle for many reasons. Number one, just like you say, it's on the opposite side of the financial scale, which makes our job so much more fascinating. I learned on my previous employer that it's so much easier to create a fantastic interior, half the coin. If you get the money, the funding, no problem.
And that would be Mercedes, so for those of you who said that.
And but where we take a lot of pride in our design studio is coming up with really cool, smart solutions that do not break the bank. Sometimes, yes, you have to add money if you want to have better leather. But there's a lot of cool solutions that just are good design and not financially expensive. And that's why we can do this what I think really cool interior for the Renegade.
Well, you see things like, well, first of all, the chances and the risk that you take with colors, you don't see a lot of automakers doing, and it's we really have, they're really a treat to drive when you look at the Renegade and you see some of the different color combinations that you've had, the copper colored trim, aluminum trim. I don't even know if I've ever seen that in a vehicle before, but it really works well with the way they matched it up with other stuff. And what was I going to say? The stitching and everything else that you find in a car that starts at about $22,000 or whatever is really impressive. And there's the color.
And you're just using accents.
Yeah.
And they really pop.
Yeah,
I mean, bright colors against dark ones. But they, man, that's part of what you're talking about, right?
We do have quite a variety of color offerings. Obviously, not all of them are as provocative as the one you saw here.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see the customer spread in the Renegade. There's the young people and the people who want to be perceived young but go a little bit more conservative with the color. So the fascination is, again, with the job is that you get the spread from a straightforward black interior all the way to the interior that we just saw. This one, for example, that we just saw with the red accents is the Trailhawk. Here you can have more like a silver, something you're more familiar with. But, you know,
hold that one, Ben. Hold that a sec, too. Because you can see on a bit of the seat cushion.
The topographical map.
And there's another picture in there somewhere, too, where it's etched into part of the console.
Yeah.
And Bring the discussion to that of how you introduce elements like this topographical map in the seat that reflect the character of the car.
See, the way we approach these things, and this is what you refer to as Easter egg, hidden treasures, the way we approach these things is if you look into the market in any segment, the difference between all the manufacturers out there came down in terms of fuel consumption, safety, quality. There's not really much differentiation left. So how do you differentiate with the car business? For us, it's important that our customer knows the car is built or created by humans for humans. It's not done by a computer. It's not done by a robot. It's not done by a machine. For us, it's important that we put these little cool details in there that shows, wow, this was done by a person that had fun doing this, that is passionate about the job, that knows this is a Jeep and puts that Jeep flair in it. And with little details like we just saw with a cubby bin, we're turning a cheap piece of plastic into a collector's item. And we do that, you know, not only in the Renegade, in multiple programs, and it gives it this passionate human touch, the soul that we're looking for.
So as I recall, the interior of the Renegade was done by a comparatively young designer.
Yes, that is true. As a matter of fact, at that point, Ian Hedge is his name. At that point, he was the youngest designer I have in my team. I said, why don't you have a stab at it? And we have a very, very small design team. I'm not at the luxury to say, hey, 20 designers, you go into a competition. You know, we almost have to handpick who we think can do it. And we also, because we're so small, we also had to rely on getting everyone up to speed very quickly. Everyone is capable of doing a production design. So I could go to him and say, you know what? I think this is you. Why don't you try it? And he came up with this really cool work of art. Especially when you look at some of the sketches he did on the way to get to this, there's some really intriguing stuff.
Is it his youth that manifests itself in many of the details that Drew was talking about in terms of the colors and the textures and the material surfaces and so on?
There's a little bit of everything. See, yes, I do, you know, light the fuse a little bit when it comes to certain things. But it's really, see, the team is, this is not 2005 anymore where whether it was Ralph, myself, or whoever else in the leadership, had to like, come on, guys, push the team. Now they're pulling us. We're like, whoa, hang on, guys. You know, it's like, this might be a little bit too crazy. But the team has really come around. You've seen that transition from a losing team to a potentially winning team where the guys have earned the self-confidence and the respect that, again, feeds that self-confidence. So you see a lot of these ideas. And I can't wait for the next round of programs to come out, because it's gonna get even better, I can't say crazier, because that's the wrong word, but more and more fascinating with what they're creating. I'm just blown away. I'm amazed every day I come to work about the creativity I find in the studio. Absolutely.
Yeah. Can you show a picture of the instrument cluster, a close up of that? I just want it's a.
Can you go back to that, Ben, on the Renegade, the instrument cluster?
Yeah, so what you're pointing out is that splash, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can see it there, yeah.
Yeah. The tachometer.
It's on the tach, it's the splash, it's a little red splash.
There it is.
You can see it better.
Oh, yeah.
And that is now in the PR material, in the public relation materials, it says politically correct, it's a mud splash. But reality is this is a paintball splash. And what we did is, because we do like hang out as a team, we party together, we work and play together. And we went and played paintball, and sure enough, I was hit on, you know, on a mask. And the designer thought, that's kind of cool.
I think so, like shooting your boss.
I can't be, you know. So the next day, he puts the paintball splash on there. And I could have sworn it would not make the committees and the reviews and the this and that. And because this is something you can quickly change last second, it's just a print, right? It would not make production. I could have sworn my salary on it. And here we have it, which also speaks for now for two things. The company at large is having fun and is letting us get away with a lot of things, but also shows how much responsibility we care. We cannot just do crazy things and call on the company to catch it and protect us. We have a high responsibility of making sure we don't do too crazy things. But this was on the right side of the line.
So let's go to the opposite of crazy. And, Ben, let's bring up some of those pictures of the interior of the 300. Because instead of being wild and crazy and out there, very elegant.
Yeah, yeah.
Not subdued, you know, but very tasteful, very elegant. So let's start talking about the steering wheel. You've done this white insert. That's an option, I believe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, God, does that make the interior pop?
Yeah.
So, you know, I agree. This is the other side of the spectrum. And that is one of the fascinating side of our job because, you know, if we control so many brands, that means there's a room for every idea. It's not that we only have Jeep to worry about and someone might come up with this idea for a steering wheel. You say, no, it can't be in a Jeep. But there's an idea. But sometimes you have to put the idea on a shelf and then you can use it in a vehicle like the Chrysler 300. And it was, for us, it was important to bring back the great American sedan. And quite honestly, that's the 300 is the car that I came to the U.S. From the European perspective, that was the car. It was just so amazingly cool. That made me come here. And now to be able to work on it and elevate it with these color combinations, there was something really, really fun.
So what you mentioned earlier, this is no longer 2005. Mm-hmm. What changed?
Well, in 2005 and then 2005, 2006, number one, we had to go from, you called it worst to best. I don't know if we were the worst or the worst, and I don't know if we're the best, but from the extremes, we had to convince the company to trust us. And that's twofold. First, yes, we have to ask for some money. And on the first program, they're like, really, can you do it better than your predecessors? You also asked for money, but didn't, I don't know if we got the return. But you have to create a trust basis and a respect basis in the company, which we now enjoy. I think we can fairly say there's a level of trust and respect towards design, but also from us towards engineering and manufacturing. There's a friendship. The bankruptcy was a catalyst, certainly, because suddenly only those people hang back who believe in the company and were hanging back who were believing in what we were cooking at that time. The 300, the Charger, the Durango, the Grand Cherokee, those programs were all underway while we were going through bankruptcy. So only those people who believe in the company stayed back. And it was a very small company. And at that time, there was this, we created the family that we're now still enjoying. And now one of my biggest tasks is when I hire someone that I make sure they fit this culture, and we don't get a subculture.
That's a great point, that you don't get a subculture. That could be hard to avoid.
I only hire individual, maximum two people at a time. I will not hire more than two people, individuals at the time, because the risk is, oh, we're the new guys, so let's hang out together, and the guy's going to get together to the sundry shop. They're going to hang out in the evenings. We want to make sure that we use individuals. We hire them individually, one or two at a time, to make sure they have no other choice but be infiltrated by the what I believe is a great culture that we have. And the culture is probably the most important asset that we have. That the work creates itself. You were asking me about, do I have to inspire people? The Easter egg, it comes out of this wonderful culture that we were able to create under Ralph Jill's leadership.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you mentioned the 300, and presumably when you saw the 300, you saw the exterior of that car and said, wow, that is really something. What was the catalyst for interior design to elevate as high as it did, certainly within your organization?
It's difficult to say. You know, if I take the RAM as an example, which was that first program that I was assigned to back in 2005, 2006, There were a couple of things that now in hindsight you think like, why would we have done it like that? It could be the color choice, it could be the shapes. You know, let's take one example, and then I want to get away from that time because I just want to forget that time, to be honest. I think the company wants to move on too.
Well, actually, we're coming up to a break.
There you go.
Why don't we take a quick break?
Forget the question.
We can come back to this thought because we got to pay some bills here, and we've got to give a shout out to our great friends at Bridgestone. So I said you could come back to that thought, Klaus, but maybe we better not go there.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't help anyone these days anymore to say, okay, this is what we did 10 years ago. This 10 years ago is the past. You know, we're happily, I think we're ready to look in the future. I think we have a team that we can be very proud of, an organization, support from management. The stars are aligning currently, so that's good.
Does that help attract the talent that you want? Do you have trouble attracting young talent?
No, not at all, actually. I think it's we went from a well, now I'm going to go back 10 years ago. We went from a phase where you had to think twice whether you want to put that company needle into your jacket on an outer show and you were proud of who you represented, to like, wow, you guys at Jeep, you kicking ass, or Chrysler, or whatever badge you were wearing that day, or SRT, Ram, all of them. And people really, the word in the design community has spread about, number one, the work we do, and number two, the culture that we have. It's a very small community. And the best testimony to it is the turnover rate. I can't really think about having lost anyone throughout those 5 years, maybe one or two people, or 10 years, I should say, one or two people for family reasons, that someone moved and they, whatever. But we have almost zero turnover rate.
Hmm. That's pretty unusual.
It is, and we're very proud of that, you know.
And do you, when you look at your competitors, whether they're domestic or international competitors, what are the things that you look for and you say to yourself, you know, we've got to get that?
Yeah, you know what? It's a fascinating question because certainly I could have given you a whole laundry list 5-6 years ago. And now I just got back from the Shanghai Auto Show or whether it's Geneva or any of the auto shows. And there's still things where I think, yeah, you know, that's a cool idea. But overall, I think in our segment, which is important to understand, you know, you can always go and look at the Germans or some other brands and say, wow, they got this and they got that. But in the segments we're playing, I think we're doing really good. Now the dangerous part is not to be arrogant and rest on our laurels. And I think the Chrysler 300 that we just talked about is a good example because the Chrysler 300, the previous model, was already award-winning, according to Ward.
Yeah.
And yet, we did not rest on our laurels. We said, you know what? We got this cool new technology, the rotary e-shifter, the next generation U-Connect, plus the 7-inch cluster, plus all these cool ideas with materials and colors. Let's upgrade the car, even though it's already award-winning. And I think that is what... The motivation comes out of ourselves now. It's not so much the competition anymore. It's trying to constantly up the game. See, the winning the awards is a fascinating thing. I can tell you we're not designing cars to win awards. We're always designing cars for the customer. The award winning seems to be a nice side effect. But at the same time, they put pressure on you because you think like, man, you know, if I go back, this is the fifth year now, or in 5 years, we've won 9 awards. And that is quite a burden. because now it's like, what happened if we don't win an award, right? So suddenly you think about that. But again, the motivation comes out of the internal drive for success and to do the best for our customer. And believe me, there's a whole list of things, regardless of competition, that we want to get better at.
So it's my view that automakers do some of their best work when their backs are to the wall. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we've seen that a lot with certainly with Detroit automakers, where they're just on the brink, and wow, then everybody is really, really scared, and suddenly management now is willing to try anything because they're staring at the abyss, and then suddenly, wow, we see some fantastic cars come out. I mean, with Chrysler going back a couple generations with cab forward design or whatever, a lot of innovation comes through that. And it seems like so many organizations, then when things are going good, people get more comfortable. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's when innovation slides off. Do you worry about that as Chrysler's going through a pretty good period now?
It's a very, very fair question, and I can relate to that question, but I can tell you with all my conviction here, you will not see that happen in our place. Absolutely zero happen. If that's going to happen, that's the first day I'm going to say, okay, that's it, I'm going to go. Same with Ralph, same with the whole management team. I think we are children of that, the bankruptcy has left such a lasting impression on me and Ralph and the whole team. You will not see that happen, absolutely not.
So when you have people that you're bringing in to work mm-hmm. on interior designs, mm-hmm. are these people who are necessarily auto people, or are you looking at people who are interested in fashion or materials or consumer electronics?
Yeah. My group consists of all of the above, actually, and that makes my job and my team's job so fascinating. Yes, we have the standard CCS graduate here from downtown Detroit, the automotive designer, interior, exterior. We have fashion people. And now with user experience playing a more and more important role, you got to look to a totally different set of schools and people to hire. So the diversity in the group is immense, not only from the skill set, but their backgrounds. If you look at the interior group, the diversity is almost mind-blowing, which, again, makes it so strong because you really have people from all groups of the society, which is really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. So we've got some questions and comments coming in from our viewers. Smooth says, now that you got more ability, please look into swivel bucket seats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point. See, the whole industry is looking at swivel seats because we're all thinking about that self-driving car and what are you going to do when the car is actually driving itself. Are you going to want to do you want to turn around the seat? We have some experience with it because we had on a previous generation minivan, we did have second row swivel seats.
Swivel and go.
Swivel and go, correct. Now, the reality of the matter is to turn a seat around while you're driving requires tons of space.
Right.
Because the backrest is reclined. You have your legs plus the whole body. So the footprint of the seat would be too much right. to be achievable in a standard footprint car. So it comes with a lot of...
But there were some swivels in the past, going even back to the 1960s, that would only turn halfway so you could get in and out of a car.
Yes, that's correct. And I know we deal with a lot of suppliers. There's half swivel or quarter swivel, but everyone came to the conclusion right now, unless you have a bus, the swivel seat really is something tough to master, just because of the real estate you need.
And today too, with safety standards, it's a whole lot tougher. You have to have so much structure in the seat.
Yeah, but that's something we already mastered with the minivan. It had integrated seat belts. The structure was sturdy enough. No, it really comes down to the footprint that you require to actually swivel that thing around.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Johnson Controls actually for a seating supplier for
actually soon to be X seating supplier
showed off a concept at the last North American Auto Show that where they swiveled like 16 degrees something like that.
There's a little bit of that, so you have that conversation, but it doesn't fully swivel for the same reason, because you couldn't have the real estate.
James Crabtree tweeted in to know, what are your thoughts about the i3 BMW? And he's asking, I think, because last week we had Sandy Monroe, who did a big teardown of the i3.
No, both i3 and i8 have my utmost respect for many, many reasons. a car like that cannot be done as an afterthought, like, hey, let's do something like this for the next auto show. That is a testimony of a long-range plan. They must have started that thought process at least 10 years ago. And BMW has my highest respect for that. In terms of the exterior design, I personally like it. I just saw a couple of them on the road in Los Angeles. The interior is interesting. I'm going to leave it there because they do experiment with some colors that, materials mostly, that you will have to think once or twice about, you know, does it fit the character of the car? Is it pleasant? Is it attractive? You know, but the car as a concept has my highest respect.
Yeah, Klaus is being nice, but the i3 actually made it on our 10 best interiors list as well, and we really liked it. It is, but the materials, a lot of them have recycled content in them, and there are surfaces and things like that that some people won't like. But the concept is fabulous.
Are there materials that are not generally used in the auto industry that you think should be used?
Other materials. I know Mercedes back in the day. We played with stone.
I thought it looked cool.
Yeah, we went away. I don't think there is, because if there is, believe me, we're working on getting it in there, and I'm going to tell you what that is. Then. Mm-hmm. So no, I think the stuff that's missing we will have. The stuff that's not missing we'll not do. So.
But I mean, it always surprises me the extent to which now leather has become such a big material.
Leather is an interesting topic. You know, I'm going to use maybe 30 seconds of your time to talk about that quickly here. Because leather is actually not that superior material. That there's better materials out there. We talked behind the wall. We talked about a bit of Louis Vuitton earlier, right? And we know Louis Vuitton is not leather, and yet it is a good material. There's so many synthetic materials that are out there that are superior to leather. You know, no one wants it to wrinkle. No one wants it to lose color. There's so many efficiencies in leather, yet we love it for what it stands. You know, the smell, and even the smell is artificial, as we know. It's not the real smell. Then you have materials like, for example, Alcantara, which are not leather-based. They're artificial, but they have this cool name, polymer.
It's a polymer-based, which really is very surprising to me, that everybody thinks it's suede.
If we have in your viewership people who work in that industry, my biggest pledge to you would be work on your marketing campaign and come up with cool names, because it just doesn't sound good if I say this is polyurethane or vinyl. They got to come up with something that is like Alcantara, because, wow, Alcantara sounds good, but it's not better or worse than vinyl or polyurethane. It just has a cool name to it.
Very interesting.
Marketing is key.
Wow. Marketing is key. Even with materials.
Absolutely.
Klaus, we're at the end of the segment. I want to thank you for coming on. It's been awesome. Very interesting discussion on interior design.
I know we can go on for another 10 hours. But
easily. We'll have you back again. We'll have you back again. But it's been awesome having you.
Thank you.
So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about some of the news that's been happening this week.
You already know that you can listen to Autoline's Industry Insight in places like YouTube and Stitcher, but did you know that you can also listen to it live in your car? It's simple. Just pair your smartphone with your vehicle's Bluetooth connection or plug into the aux jack. Then navigate to Autoline.tv using your phone's browser. Find the show you want to hear and click play just like you would on your computer.
This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy.
It's that easy. Never be disconnected from Autoline's top-notch insider information with Autoline on the go.
So a lot going on in the industry right now.
Yeah, seems like, huh?
So let's start with Piëch at Volkswagen, because I'm just fascinated by what went on there and dying to hear what you guys have to think about that or say about it, Gary.
But did you see the newest one that his nieces are being promoted to the board?
And he doesn't want to see
replace
this
him and his wife, and they're like they don't want any part of that. I mean, it's a particularly different situation because there's family involved in a way that family is not involved. You know, even with the Ford family. I mean, it's a giant company that has DNA in the mix and. I mean, it's incredibly interesting to look at, I mean, how well Volkswagen Group has been doing. You know, he tries to make a play to get rid of an executive and finds himself not working there anymore.
Yeah, well, it was funny to see how everyone was handicapping who was going to come out ahead. It was like everyone was watching an episode of Dynasty or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right.
And you know, they're saying, well, is he going to come up on top? Why am I betting on him? He's, you know, and my feeling is everyone says, well, you know, he lost. He took a big risk, you know, and now, he was brought down. The guy still owns a boatload of shares. He's got a lot of. I think he's still going to be pulling strings behind the scene. We haven't heard the last of him, and I think and he is such a known manipulator, right, that I think this could be some sort of fake play on his. You know, everybody thinks, oh, he's giving up and going away. I don't think that's going to happen. He's mm-hmm.
But he is off the board, right? He's stepping down from the board. That's going to pull a lot of direct power. I mean, he can't vote now.
Right.
He can pull strings behind the scene, but I got to wonder, what will those string pullings be? Or what will the company do now that he's gone? And so just to throw out something to get, you know, stir the pot here, you know, we all know that the Phaeton was his baby. He wanted to see Volkswagen brand have this big grand sedan. It's been a disaster.
Well, it's financial still being sold, though, right? It's still being sold in Europe, right.
Okay. But the numbers are inky dinky.
Yeah, that's a vanity play. It probably would never be still on the market if it probably weren't.
So will finally the board go, hey, let's get rid of this turkey.
There was a picture of one in China because you could see the Bird's Nest stadium that was behind it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there we go. But you think about it. I mean, the money that Volkswagen Group is making, they're making money on Audi, they're making money on
Bentley and Porsche.
And Porsche especially, yeah. And
commercial trucks too, by the way.
Right. So you think about it, I mean, a Phaeton, who's even going to notice, right? I mean, you make it, you put it
out
there.
Yeah, but let's say you've lost $1 billion on that program. It's probably even more than that, by the way. Couldn't Volkswagen of America really use $1 billion right now in marketing and incentives and product? And so I hear what you're saying is like, yeah, that's kind of a drop in the bucket when you look at but man, VWOA could use that money last year, two years ago.
Is the underpinnings of the Phaeton used as an Audi? Is it an A8 maybe, A6?
Yeah, I believe it is part of the A8.
So, you know, the vaunted MQB, I mean, no problem. I mean, those engineering costs are being absorbed, no problem.
But they built that whole special factory, the glass factory for it in Dresden, they spent a lot of money on it. I don't think that would have been okayed by any board that wasn't, you know, totally controlled by somebody. Mm-hmm. But and then particularly you look at the dealership angle where you were asking people paying, you know, Mercedes S-Class money to go to a Volkswagen dealership.
Right.
You know, the dealers could not deliver the buying experience or anything else.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other one I wonder about is Seat, their Spanish brand, has been a perennial money loser, although I did see they turned a profit in the first quarter of this year. Mm-hmm. But that, before I saw that, when the results came out yesterday, that's what I was also wondering. Would a new board say, you know, let's just kill it. We're not making money on this, and, you know, let's just cut our losses and put all that money into bolstering up the other brands.
Okay, but don't executives like to have many, many brands because this just seems to indicate to them that they're more powerful?
But you know, they have Seat and they have Skoda. Mm-hmm. They have two entry-level brands, and now they're starting some other third entry-level brand in China. I mean, how many entry-level brands?
Well, so you have one in Western Europe, you have one in Eastern Europe. I mean, come on.
But it's making money, so, I mean, it's maybe a lower priority. I think the biggest mystery about Volkswagen to me, and it's been there for forever, is how can it be so successful in every market of the world except pretty much the U.S.? Somehow it just doesn't do well in the U.S. I guess the short answer is trucks. They don't, you know, they're
not. But I wonder if it's trucks so much, or is that, okay, if you know, we've all been to Germany, and you talk to Germans, and Germans are going to buy German cars, right? I mean, they're going to buy German cars just regardless. They don't care what else is out there. And I think that over the years, in a place like the United States, we become more comfortable with buying European cars, with buying Asian cars, with buying American cars. You know, we're more inclusive in terms of what we're going to buy. So as a result of that, you've got really serious competition among General Motors wants to best Toyota, and Toyota wants to best General Motors, and Ford wants to beat so-and-so. So you have really strong competition that Volkswagen doesn't face anywhere else in the world, basically, right? Because nobody's going to say, well, am I going to buy a Golf or am I going to buy a Corolla? I mean, it's not even a consideration if you're in Germany.
Yeah, but you know what the weird thing is? If you go back 3 years ago when the then-new Passat was out, and they were building that in Chattanooga.
And that development program was beat Toyota Camry. That was what was behind them in that car.
And the first year and a half, they were off to the races. This is when they had come out and said, we're going to be the biggest in the world and all that and stuff. And, man, their sales just took off. And then, like, in 2013, boom, they kissed bricks. It came to a halting, screeching halt. And it was like, wait a minute. It's still a nice car. What the hell happened?
Yeah, but if you look at the numbers for, which I don't have here, which I know is going to disappoint people profoundly out there. But, I mean, if you look at the sales numbers for all of Volkswagen's in the United States, I mean, until the Golf began to put some life into it, man, they were selling virtually nothing. I mean, I remember last year when, the bright shining star was the Beetle Cabrio. I mean, it's like,
right.
Not
well,
good.
Well, forever I've heard dealers complain about this whole idea of cadence, where in the U.S., the products come in, they come in three at a time or too many at a time, and then there's this huge low where there's nothing there, and you can't build a strong...
What they call fire and forget. Yeah. You launch the product, you have a big advertising campaign, then you're on to the next one.
Yeah.
So we'll come back. We got a lot more to talk about of what's going on in the industry. We're going to take a quick break.
A little chemistry goes a long way, especially when it comes to vehicle development. From enabling the use of alternate materials to withstanding extreme vehicle environments, Henkel's adhesive, sealants, and surface technologies provide solutions for every vehicle segment. Come see for yourself. Our Detroit area headquarters offers 12 research and development and testing laboratories with the ability to do full-range testing and validation on actual vehicle parts. Sign up to tour our labs at henkelna.com/tour.
And, of course, we want to thank Henkel for making this show possible, along with Bridgestone and anybody else who wants to join the party. Let's change topics here, because another big thing that's been going on this week is Sergio Marchionne running around telling everybody, we got to have a partner. Everybody's got to consolidate. Drew, what do you read into why he's doing this so vehemently?
Well, he's looking for a partner. He's getting a lot of pressure, I think, and it's so hard to compete globally now, and they're making, Chrysler, I think, is making most of the money it's making in the U.S. now, and suddenly you see the same thing, just like when they were partnered up with Daimler. Chrysler was a star when they were making lots of money, but when suddenly, if we see, couple of years, the market starts going down globally or whatever, and Chrysler starts being this cash cow, he's kind of, with the rest of the assets they have scattered throughout the world, aren't very strong. And he needs to have a stronger company, get stronger revenue and everything else to keep the machine running. And it's going to be tough the way he is now.
Well, he was talking on an earnings call this week about... And this surprised me quite a bit. He was talking about having companies develop engines together in a big way. And he says, people won't care about that. Now, you might look at the fact that the Renault-Nissan Alliance and Daimler have gotten together on engines, but they're very limited. But, I mean, I got the sense from what Marchionne seemed to be saying is just like, you know what? If they can't see it, smell it, or touch it, screw it. We're gonna have that be done by someone else, and that will be a partner with us. And that might be an exaggeration of the situation, but he was talking about the amount of money that is being burned in product development by every company on an ongoing basis, and he's saying this is just not sustainable. Therefore, you have to have companies get together in this development and save some of that money.
Well, and he's looking at, you know, carbon standards that are looking tougher and tougher going out, you know, only maybe one product cycle now if we get to about 2018, especially 2022, both in the U.S. And globally. The development for powertrains are getting really, really expensive. Mm-hmm. And we are, but the thing is, we are seeing, you know, automakers combining resources on the really risky stuff like fuel cells, and then they've done lots of powertrain collaborations before on the risky
stuff.
Sure,
GM and Chrysler have done transmissions, designing a new one as we speak that they're sharing on. And remember, in the not too distant past, Saturn actually sold vehicles with Honda engines in them. And so, yeah.
But that was unbadged, and those red lines were not told. You know, that was not
part of... Well, GM never made a big deal that they had Honda engine.
Yeah.
But I got to believe at the dealership, the salesperson would have said, you know, that's got a Honda engine in it.
Right.
So,
would it have been as good if it were the sales guy saying, this is an engine that is developed by General Motors and Honda? And, of General Motors of that age, uh-huh. you know, which was not so well regarded.
I see another thing going on, too, is Chrysler's cash pile is starting to go down. I think it just dropped by another $1.2 or $1.3 billion in the last quarter. And I think and their debt level is pretty high for a company their size. And my guess is Sergio's going, to your point, Drew, man, we're making a lot of money on Jeeps and Rams and Durangos and all that right now. But we know there's a downturn in the American market. And when this cash cow goes away, man, I got nothing. And I got to pour billions into trying to build Alfa Romeo up into something. At the same time, I got to spend even more billions keeping my other lines going. And I know that any big deal is probably going to take a year or two to put together. And if I look out a couple of years, man, my cash pile's even smaller. So I got to start shaking, you know, the trees right now. Who can I partner with? Who will come and partner with me? Because I've got to negotiate from a position of strength. And in a couple of years, I'm not going to be as strong as I am right now. And so you heard Carlos Tavares, the head of PSA, Peugeot, saying, oh, we're not interested in doing a deal right now. And I think that's Tavares' way of sort of admitting, if I try to negotiate with anybody right now, I'm in a real weak position. PSA is starting to improve, but it's still extremely weak. But Tavares knows in a couple of years he's going to be in a much better position to negotiate. And I think that's part of the dynamic that's going on right now. Sergio needs a deal as fast as he can have because he's in a strong position today. Tavares doesn't want to do a deal right now because he'll be in a stronger position tomorrow.
Yeah, but honestly, okay, if FCA gets together with PSA, I mean, come on. A French company that has minuscule sales, you know, they sell more cars in China than they sell in France, okay? And it's partially owned by the French government. I mean, so is that going to save Marconi's bacon?
No.
I don't think so at all.
No. That's just one leg of the stool. He needs an Asian partner, big time. He needs somebody in China right now.
Well, but PSA can take care of that. I mean, they're building plants
they're doing the
DS line there.
But,
it's doing
but
very
even
well.
Even better, you know, I still think going after somebody like Great Wall or Geely or even BYD.
But wouldn't they go after him? I mean...
Why not?
Isn't this going to be that FCA would be absorbed by somebody rather than it doing the absorbing?
Yes, absolutely. Who's ever got the most cash is going to win.
And I think some of this is simply job security for Sergio because, you know, we all know he's this, you know, this incredible workaholic.
I think it's a retirement plan.
He talks about retiring, but he really doesn't want to retire. He wants to do some big, huge deal that's going to take a few years.
Well, he does the deal, and then he's like... Huh. And now I'll retire.
Well, you know, you've got to think about his legacy. No question about it. And look, the guy is made bucket loads of money. You know, he can walk away from this afternoon and say, you know, I'm sick and tired of it.
But he doesn't want to get pushed out. You know, I mean, I just think part of this is he still wants to be on top for a while. And mm-hmm. if he does some big, huge deal, that'll keep him busy for a good many years.
Well, we got to talk about some product. I mean, Cadillac announcing the CTS-V this yesterday, in fact, I think that that's pretty significant what these guys are really really throwing down, that they're going to you know, win the horsepower war against the likes of Mercedes and BMW. I think that's pretty risky play that Dinesen is doing there with you know, coming out with the 6.2-liter supercharged V8 that is going to be producing 640 horsepower. I mean, that's some big stuff that they're doing
there.
Serious power. And so, you know, they've got the ATS-V, and so I started looking at to see the power to weight ratio, which is a good way of looking at cars. And so, so the regular ATS coupe with a 3.6 liter V8 that has 320 horsepower weighs 3,418 pounds. So it has a power weight ratio of 0.093.
Okay. So state it the other, how many pounds per horsepower? Do you know?
I didn't figure that one out.
Because that's the only way I know how it works.
Right.
But okay, but just look at it this way. So a higher number is better. So if you look at the ATS-V, it weighs 3,700 pounds, right? It weighs more than the ATS coupe, and I thought, wow, that's strange. So I contacted Cadillac and said, why does it weigh more? And they said, well, we had to beef the car up because of, you know, the demands.
Yeah, it's got some big bracing,
That are being put on it, and that accounts. Mm-hmm. So we took as much weight out of it as we could, but we had to add weight. Mm. So anyway, so it's got 464 horsepower, okay? So it's got a 0.125, okay? Not the normal one, 0.093.
Yeah.
This one, 1.125. Okay, so now we've gone way up. So then you look at the regular CTS with a 3.6 liter engine. Okay, it weighs 3,952 pounds and produces 420 horsepower. So that's 0.10. Okay, so that's a little bit less than the ATS-V, but it's a hell of a lot more than an ATS. Now you look at the CTS-V. Okay. 4,145 pounds.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you have a car with 4,100?
I
can't imagine.
Yeah.
Okay. Its number is 1.15. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, and so is this the right thing for Cadillac to be doing, to be throwing out?
Well, John was talking earlier about, we were talking before the show about the immense profitability of Mercedes and why luxury cars are so important. If you take, I'm sure, the luxury divisions of AMG, or the performance units, you know, AMG and Mercedes and the others, performance units, their profit margins, I'm sure, is even higher.
They are.
And that's where it's a key, I think, performance is really key, even in this era where we're looking at you know, such tough fuel economy. This niche market of high-performance luxury, I think, is enormously profitable. It's a great way to build your brand. And I think, well, I'm sure that's why, you know, Cadillac is doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's maybe even a faster way, rather than trying to out-luxury Mercedes or whatever. You can certainly... GM and Cadillac certainly has the engineering to make a car that can perform along the lines of
that's a good point, because, you know, you can argue luxury all day long.
Yeah.
Luxury in many cases is in the eye of the beholder, or it may not be easily quantified. You get the performance, the stopwatch don't lie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My car is faster, or it brakes better, you know.
It's got horsepower. You know, you start quoting horsepower, right, torque numbers, or whatever. Engineers love it because it's all highly quantifiable.
Right,
right.
But it's also something you can brag about and you can prove out on a track.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the ATS, just in regular form, is one of my favorite cars. Mm-hmm. I mean, it handles terrific.
Nonetheless, I think Gary raises a really good point. Is this the proper route to go? I would say yes, because in addition to profits, it engenders a lot of brand loyalty. The AMG, the M, the S, the V, the F at Lexus, that generates a lot of brand loyalty. But I say you still raise the right point, because, you know, I'm still amazed at, you know, when Olivier Francois did that Super Bowl ad with M&M introducing yet again the Chrysler 200, adopting the slogan imported from Detroit, and sales took off.
And when you look at the Ron Burgundy ads for the Dodge Durango, which I thought were silly and infantile, and the day those ads ran, sales of the Durango took off. And if you look at the Buick ads right now, you know, the old lady going, that's not a Buick. Damn if that hasn't translated into sales. That's what Cadillac needs. They need a brilliant marketing campaign where sales take off the day those ads start running.
So you don't think Derek Greatley's doing it?
No. No. I don't see it in the sales numbers. I mean, their sales numbers are going nowhere. Mm-hmm. And the product is sensational. Yeah. It's fantastic. These are the best Cadillacs I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. In my career time, these are the finest Cadillacs, best engineering, you know, lightweight, all this power-to-weight ratio and everything that you're quoting here. The product, they don't have a product problem. Mm-hmm. They have a brand image problem. Yeah. They have a sales problem. They have a market share problem. And advertising and marketing is what's going to change that around. And as the three different ads that I just cited show, it can happen this afternoon. Mm-hmm. You don't have to build this great brand equity and acquire heritage and get people. No, you get the right ad, bang, it changes instantly.
I disagree somewhat with luxury buyers because I think they're more discerning. And I think, you know, you look at it took BMW 25 years to really.
Didn't take Lexus long.
No. So
and Lexus came out with these brilliant ads. Yeah. Remember the stacks of champagne glasses and the ball bearings running down the gaps of the car? Bang, they hit the ground running.
Yeah.
But still, they came out with a product really that was that was way better than a comparable. They were offering a $50,000 car for about $35,000 at that point when they first rolled out. I mean, it was a massive product effort.
But it still took those ads to have people go, ooh, look at that. Maybe I ought to run down to the store and see what this is all about.
Yeah, no, I think that works, but I think. In this market at this time, Cadillac has a tougher mark to hit with competing. When your competitors are really strong, like BMW, Mercedes, Audi, and whatever, I think it's just got to put in the grunt work. It's going to take a lot of time to be considered equal, even though they've got a lot of the tools already there.
You know, Klaus mentioned that he was at the Shanghai Auto Show last week, and last week Cadillac announced something else, that they were going to have a plug-in hybrid version of the CT6, which sort of struck me as being appropriate and interesting. And so what I thought was very interesting, so here you have this plug-in hybrid, and I thought, what are they putting in this plug-in hybrid? And so they're going to have an 18.4 kilowatt-hour lithium-ion battery pack, which consists of 192 cells. And I thought, what else consists, you know, what else has that? The new Volt that'll be coming out has 18.4 kilowatt-hours and 192 cells.
That'd be crazy.
Same battery pack.
Okay,
yeah.
But the week before, Cadillac announced the new ELR. So I had figured it's going to have 18.4 kilowatt-hours and 192 cells. Nope. It's got 17.1 kilowatt hours and 288 cells.
Old tech.
So what's going on with that? I mean, because remember the whole knock on the ELR was that it was basically a Volt in Cadillac clothing.
Right.
And so you would have thought that they're using the same system?
The new 18.192 cell that you quoted, it ain't ready. That's my read of it.
But that's going to be the Volt, and that'll be the...
Yeah, but those are still deep into next year before they hit the market.
So you just think it's just basically a matter of...
Yeah, we've got an interview that we haven't run yet coming up with Chelsea Sexton. Battery price...
Who's Chelsea Sexton?
Oh, Chelsea Sexton is an EV advocate and consultant to the industry. She really knows her stuff. She was also a consultant to the movie Revenge of the Electric Car. So she's out in California and all that. She really knows her stuff, but I just did an interview with her. Battery prices are coming down faster than anyone expected. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at the ELR, it has... Okay, so the Volt came out. The ELR came out. Now the ELR is getting the second gen of where the Volt was going, and the new Volt coming out next year. Or no, later this year, isn't it? Yeah, the new Volt is later this year. That's going to be like the third gen, I think, is what you might be able to call it. Maybe the ELR has, you know, gen 1.5 and the new Volt will be 2.0. But yeah, the ELR clearly doesn't have the latest tech.
Well, and I don't think they're going to be the ELR selling in tiny amounts. You know what I mean? I don't think they're going to make some special. I can't see the ELR dictating any product programs or cadence at the levels they're selling. I think they've.
Look, I'm impressed they're doing an upgrade to it. To your point, I mean, this thing's deadsville, right? Yeah. It just isn't selling.
I mean, I was just
so the fact they're going to upgrade it is actually, you know, kudos to them.
Yeah, because I mean, they're selling in. I was trying to think if it was in two digits or three digits. I mean, it's not been good.
Right, but no plugins are selling in any volume.
It depends on the i3 is.
I consider that an electric. Okay. Not a plug-in.
Because it's kind of both. You can get the range extender on
it. Yeah, but everybody hates the range extender.
Yeah, but until you need it.
But we heard all about that last week. Well, right. The range extender is not a good idea.
Right.
Well, hey, we're at the top of the hour here. We ought to wrap this up, but cool having Klaus here.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah.
And
Your point, you know, if it's a horsepower thing, that T-shirt he had on, the Hellcat, 707 horsepower, that even beats that new Cadillac.
I know it. That's exactly. Look, everybody is stunned at the horsepower they pulled out of that Hellcat engine. Stunned.
Yeah.
And as you guys know, it does more than 707.
Yeah.
And they've got a couple of other upgrades they're ready for.
Well, yeah, and the thing that's real clear, they didn't just slap a supercharger on it, you know, and that's what we did. I mean, they did a lot of work on that engine. Mm-hmm. It's quite an engineering achievement.
But I do want that T-shirt.
Yeah, that's awesome, yeah.
Drew, thanks for coming on, man. Great having you here.
It was good to be here.
Good. And Gary, let's do it again next week.
All right, we'll do that.
Okay. So want all of you to join us again then.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Henkel, excellence is our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.